The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter number 19, text number 35, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on December 21st, 2009, in Sydney, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 19, text number 35. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Kratur viramatam esha Deveshu duravagraha Dharma vyattariko yatra Pakandair indra nirmitai Kratur viramatam esha Deveshu duravagraha Dharma vyatikaro yatra Pakandair indra nirmitai. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Lord Brahma continued, "Stop the performance of these sacrifices, for they have induced Indra to introduce so many irreligious aspects. You should know very well that even amongst the demigods there are many unwanted desires. There are many competitors in ordinary business affairs. The Karmakanda chapters of the Vedas sometimes cause competition and envy amongst karmis. A karmi must be envious because he wishes to enjoy material pleasures to their fullest extent. That is the material disease. Consequently, there is always competition amongst karmis, either in ordinary business affairs or in the performance of yajna. Lord Brahma's purpose was to end the competition between Lord Indra and Maharaj Prithu. Because Maharaj Prithu was a great devotee and incarnation of God, he was requested to stop the sacrifices so that Indra might not further introduce irreligious systems which are always followed by criminal-minded people. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sagana Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadaita Savaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakandri Tamscha. Envy. It's pretty heavy, envy. In fact, envy is so heavy, it's what brought us here to begin with. You're envious of Krishna. So if we're envious of Krishna, it's not surprising we're envious of everybody else also. If you can be envious of God, you can be envious of anyone. Isn't it? You're going to be offensive towards God himself, and you can be offensive towards everyone. So that is the nature of this material existence. We see that it even carries over into the activities amongst great personalities like Prithu Maharaj and Indra. It can even carry into our own dealings within ISKCON also. So we have to be very careful. That envy doesn't enter into our activities amongst each other. Here Brahma was a mediator in this quarrel. You see. So we have to see how to avoid envy in our own dealings with each other. I may see, well, this devotee, he's very successful in preaching or in any particular thing, cooking, in playing musical instruments. You see, I may notice, so he's very expert. He's very advanced in doing that. But then, because I'm envious, I think, but he must be very proud. You see, I find fault. I don't want to appreciate him, even though he's worthy of appreciation. I want to think, but he must be very, because of that, he must be very, very proud. You see, he must not have any humility. In this way, out of envy, I think bad thoughts about that devotee. So what does that do to me? That checks my spiritual advancement because I am committing Vaishnava aparad within my heart against that devotee. So envy is the cause of Vaishnava aparad, which is called hati metta. If you think it in your mind, eventually it'll come out in something you say also, in the way that you act also. So as they say in the English language, you got to nip it in the bud. If you're thinking negative thoughts or envious thoughts about a devotee, you got to nip it. So what do? You just kill it? Okay, don't think. Well, you have to have something positive to replace it with. You can't just not think about a particular devotee, especially if you're associating with that devotee regularly. So you have to think positively. You have to appreciate, oh, he must really love Krishna. He must have genuine feelings of bhakti. And he's expressing it in his preaching, in his musical abilities, his cooking or deity worship, whatever it may be, management. You see? See it in a positive, worship that devotee's qualities, you understand? And this is confirmed by Narottam Das. Anande bolohadi borjavrindavan Shri Guru Vaishnava pade mojayaman. Ecstatically chant Hare Krishna. Worship the holy Dham. And worship the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnavas. So every Vaishnava is worshipable. Otherwise, why do we pray every day, Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha? Is that some ritual? Or is it real? You understand? If they are actually oceans of mercy, then we have to appreciate them, truly appreciate them like that. So, the opposite, this is the one of those insider secrets on the bhakti path. If you appreciate the divine qualities of a god brother or a god sister, you see, then those wonderful qualities which are emanating from, they're emanating in their service. Those qualities, it's like the sun rays warm you up. The rays of their divine qualities then have an effect on you, and you develop those qualities yourself. So the more we can appreciate Vaishnavas, the more we will inherit their qualities. And there are so many wonderful devotees in this movement who are like sun gods, emanating so many wonderful qualities. If we can just be appreciating, well, this devotee has that nice quality, and this devotee has that nice quality, in this way, find something about every, even if the devotee is 90% rotten. I mean, we all have good and bad qualities, let's face it, you know. But find that 10% in that particular way that devotee shines like anything, you see. Find that 10% and always appreciate that 10% in that devotee, that wonderful quality he has, you see. Another way to think of it is, how would Prabhupada see this person? You see? Instead of seeing through your eyes, try to think, how would Prabhupada see this particular devotee? What would his vision of this devotee be? With Prabhupada's merciful, unlimitedly merciful vision, how would he see this particular devotee? So in this way, we can, in a very positive, merciful, intelligent way, if we can see, perceive, think about, and then obviously, in that mood, we'll be associating with the devotees of this wonderful society of ISKCON. Then we will advance very quickly on the pathway back to home, back to Godhead. I remember one of my own experiences of conquering envy. One thing I couldn't stand was the devotees who got to be with Prabhupada. You know, his personal entourage. It used to, I was so envious. They're with Prabhupada. They're up there in his room with him. I'm down here in the Brahmacharya ashram. Usually, I mean, it was like once every 2 years I'd even be in the same city that Prabhupada was for a couple of days. Other than that, I was, you know, thousands of miles away. So these devotees who got to be with Prabhupada all the time, day in and day out on the walks, in the room, when he said this and he said that, and they got to ask him this question, and they had this conversation. It's just, it was, I was very envious. So I remember I was there in Atlanta. Prabhupada was there. And so, you know, there I was. The servants were up there with him, and I was down, you know, two buildings down in the basement somewhere. But anyway, there we were in the morning program. I was standing right on Prabhupada's right-hand side. And then Shrutakirti Prabhu, who's his personal servant, the object of one of those objects of my envy, right? He was on the other side of the Vyasa. So I gazed over at Shrutakirti across Prabhupada's lap. And Prabhupada was sitting right here, and I was standing right there, and I looked over. It was like this far away. And the Prabhupada was sitting here, I was here, and the devotee was right there. And I looked over at Shrutakirti, and he was my object of envy, right? And Shrutakirti Prabhu gave me the most wonderful, effulgent smile, and he was just like, it was so pure and sweet and wonderful, it was just like he was a mirror, that Prabhupada's this mercy was bouncing off of, was shining off of Prabhupada, and he was like a mirror of her Prabhupada's mercy, and bouncing that mercy back to me. He gave me the most wonderful smile. He looked over looked across Prabhupada's lap at me and gave me the most wonderful smile, and I just went, phew, I just was uplifted like anything by his smile, you see. And I realized, you know, even though he's getting all this mercy of being with Prabhupada, but he's not thinking, oh, I'm great because I'm with Prabhupada. And these other low-class devotees, they don't get to be with Prabhupada. I do because I'm high-class. It wasn't like that, you see. I was thinking like that they would think that way, you see. But actually, he wasn't thinking that way. He just wanted to share the mercy. And actually, the story of how he was appointed as Prabhupada's servant That's quite something also. There was a big festival that I was in attendance at in the summer of, 71. In New Vrindavan, yes. No, 72, that's right. It was a big, huge festival. All the devotees came from all over the movement, which in that time was mostly North America and a few in Europe. And it was called the Bhagavad Dharma Discourses. And it was really great. They made a pavilion up on top of the mountain. And every day we'd go up there and they'd bring Prabhupada in a palanquin and we'd be up there on the top of the mountain with Prabhupada, you know, and he'd be giving all these Bhagavad Dharma discourses. It was really, really sweet. And they advertised it to the media. Time magazine came, Newsweek, the New York Times, they covered it. It was a big thing. It was really cool. I mean, it was really, really something. So there was one devotee who was the cook during this whole time. He had to stay in the kitchen the whole time and cook for us. Hundreds of devotees were up there enjoying with Prabhupada and they're slaving in the kitchen. And he accepted it. He didn't get to come and hear Prabhupada. He had to stay in the kitchen, his cook for all of us, hundreds and hundreds of devotees. And he accepted it. And then they announced, and that was Adishuddha Kirti. He was down there doing the austerity of cooking for all of us. And we were up there with Prabhupada on the mountaintop. And then it was announced that Shuddha Kirti would be Prabhupada's servant. There needed to be a new servant, so he was named to be the new servant. You see? So actually, he had qualified himself to be in that position by by humbly serving all of the Vaishnavas, hundreds of us, cooking for us day in and day out, slaving away in the kitchen while we're up there enjoying the festival with Prabhupada. He was down there in the kitchen, the bottom of the hill, you know, slaving it out over the stove for us so we could be up there with Prabhupada. And then because of his austerity, you see, then Krishna blessed him. Right now you can be Prabhupada's personal servant. So we really have to understand that some devotee who has some position, some recognition, it's not by accident. Not by accident. So instead of being envious of that devotee, if we can appreciate that devotee, then Krishna will give us our chance. And I wrote Prabhupada also previous to the experience with Shuddha Kirti, which was a very revealing experience for me. I had written Prabhupada because I knew this was a psychological problem I was having, being envious of those devotees who got to be in his close association. So I wrote Prabhupada, what can I do, Prabhupada, to overcome this envy? And he wrote me back, he said, and I thought he was going to tell me, yeah, that's not very good, and here's what you can do to overcome it. I was surprised by his answer. He wrote me back and said, spiritual envy means to see that somebody else is being recognized more than you by Krishna. So now you should try harder so Krishna will recognize you also. Transcendental competition, you see, transcendental envy. So Prabhupada encouraged me in that way. And actually, take your envy in a transcendental way. By excellent service, they've qualified themselves to get this special recognition. Now you qualify yourself also. That was the answer. So that's another way of looking at envy. You see, envious of another devotee's advancement in Krishna consciousness. Take that as an inspiration that you can also advance in Krishna consciousness. But as I pointed out, that will not happen by finding fault with them and trying to minimize their glories. What does Krishna say? Ye me bhakta jana parta, na me bhakta shtate jana, mad bhakta nanchabe yaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. Krishna says, my dear Arjuna, my dear son of Prita, the one who is my devotee, ye me bhakta jana parta. Na me bhaktas. He's not my devotee. What? Krishna says, the one who is my devotee, he's not my devotee. What does he mean? He says, but the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So how much am I the devotee of the devotees? How much do I really feel that I'm a devotee of the devotees? within my heart, within my words and my actions. How much do I really feel that I'm a devotee of the devotees? Only to that extent does Krishna accept me as his devotee. But I just think, who are these devotees? They're just a bunch of, you know, low-class kanishtas. Where am I? And I'm nowhere, you see. If I'm not devoted to the devotees, then Krishna will never accept my devotion. That's why a guru is required, you see. You have to become completely sold-out devotee of a devotee. Only then will Krishna accept. And as I gave in the example from Narottam, not only do we worship Guru, but all the Vaishnavas. We have to worship all the Vaishnavas. So in this way, you see, then envy will not be a factor. It will detract from our Krishna consciousness. We can revive that loving feeling. Prabhupada explained that one of the items of surrendering to Krishna is to become a part of a spiritual family. So we have to see this as a family. This ISKCON movement is a worldwide family. Family means loving relationships, not just some corporation or some, you know, organization. It's a family. We have to be in the family mood. That means the personal mood. These are our family members, our brothers, our sisters, our nieces, our nephews, our aunts, our uncles, our fathers, our mothers, you see. In this way, we have to enter into this society, the international society for Krishna consciousness, in the mood of being a part of a family. Very personal, you see. And in this way, we can actually become Krishna conscious. I remember one of the nicest experiences I had with Prabhupada. Of course, you join the movement, you know, you're like, you know, like a private in the army, you know. There's the big general, General Prabhupada, you know, heading the troops, and you're way back there in the rank and file somewhere in the back somewhere. I mean, those little privates, you know, raw recruit privates in the huge ISKCON army, you see. And so anyway, I had written Prabhupada sending in my guru Dakshina. I think it was in that letter he responded. Yeah. I'd gotten initiated by from a distance because Prabhupada was in the UK at the time and I was in Texas. So instead of just handing him my guru dakshina, I mailed this along with a letter, and he wrote me a very nice letter back. But the end of the letter, this was really something, because everything was like official, you know, the guru instructing the disciple, which is proper and is wonderful. But there's another rasa that Prabhupada threw in, which is very special. Another thing is you always wondered, well, Prabhupada dictated the letter and the secretary typed it up. I wonder how much the secretary edited it with his own words. There'll always be that doubt, you know. Maybe the secretary threw a little something in you never know. I mean, Prabhupada signed it. And you accept it as Prabhupada, but still, the secretary could have edited a little bit. You know, you always wonder. There's always that doubt, you know. But then I was so happy because Ajahn Prabhupada signed it. He, in his own pen, the same pen he had signed A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, he put a P.S. in the same ink. And I went, wow, I get a P.S. from Prabhupada. And his P.S. was, you know, and it was very, very significant for me because, I mean, all he said was this. He said, P.S., we are going to Nairobi on Friday night. But what is that? That's something that a father would tell to his son, you see, a family member. In a formal letter in a corporation, you don't put something like that. You know what I mean? That was a family thing. P.S., we're going to Nairobi on Friday night. That's something you tell an intimate family member. Someone, oh, I actually am, he's accepting me as his son. Oh, I was so happy, you see. So, it's not just an official corporation where you're doing your duties and you're reporting to your higher authorities, that's there. But the real thing is that family relationship, you see. That's the sweet aspect, the sweet, sweet aspect of this Krishna consciousness movement. Develop loving relationships with Vaishnavas, the six kinds of loving exchanges. Because just to officially do your duty without developing loving relationships with devotees, eventually you'll leave this movement. That's a fact. You won't stay. We have to develop those loving feelings with devotees. Personal loving relationships. When those are there, you see, then we will, if we have personal loving relationships with devotees in this movement, we'll never leave this movement. And that is really the only thing that will make this movement successful on this planet, is high quality personal loving relationships. When those are there in our movement, then the whole world will come and join. And this is a place where you can get high quality personal loving relationships, you see. And everyone will eventually join this movement. Because this world is so impersonal. Everybody's just trying to exploit everybody, you know. The boy says, I love you, I love you, I love you. He has sex with her and then get lost. You see? Simply exploitation. So this is a place where we can find genuine loving relationships. All we have to do is take that loving mercy which is coming down from Srila Prabhupada and share it. That's all we have to do. Take that loving mercy which is dripping down from the lotus feet of Prabhupada. That honey that's dripping from his, that loving honey mercy which is dripping from his lotus feet, and share it with everybody. It's all we have to do. There's an unlimited oceans of mercy honey oozing from Prabhupada's lotus feet. We just have to share that mercy with everyone. That's all we have to do. Even if we ourselves don't have any mercy, you know, we just have dry hearts, envious hearts. But if we can just take that loving mercy that's coming from Prabhupada and share it with everyone, you see, and that will awaken the love, the natural love within ourselves, and awaken the natural love within everyone else. And this way, we will be happy, and the whole world will become happy. So, I thank you very much for so kindly hearing these words coming from our Krishna consciousness philosophy. And now I can ask if there's any questions. Yes, Prabhu? You can tell me in my ear, yeah, that's better, yeah. Okay. That's good.
Sometimes with some devotees I have problems with, because like I see they've got good qualities, but then sometimes they might do something I find really dumb or really irritating, and I try to see the good qualities, but I see something that...
Well, the thing is, it's even though we're not supposed to be fault finders, that doesn't mean you should think that everything that everybody does is perfect. You have to make a distinction. Otherwise, you'll be imitating the bad things that neophyte devotees do also, you see. So we really have to have the discrimination. See, well, you know, there may be someone who comes to the temple, who does all kinds of wonderful service, and you appreciate him, his enthusiasm. You know, some congregational member, he goes out and smokes cigarettes. You think, well, but he's, you know, his cigarette smoking must be okay because he does nice service. No, we have to make the distinction between what's proper and what's improper according to the instructions that Prabhupada has given us. So the wonderful example is this. One should see the good qualities within the person. Just like when I was a kid, we used to camp out in the Boy Scouts. We'd go to the woods and we'd camp out. We'd have a nice campfire in the evening. And you'd wake up and just be a pile of ashes there, you see. Be chilly and cold in the morning, and you want to get a fire going, you know, to cook breakfast or whatever. But then it'd be just a bunch of ashes. But within those ashes, there'd be a little burning coal still, you know. So you have to put some kindling there, and you have to fan it and make a blazing fire again. So amongst the ashes of all the bad qualities in the hearts of us, you see, We have to see those burning, the burning coals of bhakti. So you have to distinguish between the ashes and the coal, and the burning coal. So you can fan those burning coals into a blazing fire. So you should see what is the good in that devotee. And in this, so you can encourage that devotee in his good qualities. Try to relate with him in such a way that will encourage that good nature within him to become fully manifest. And that way the bad qualities will automatically go away. Sometimes we may have to point out someone's bad qualities, you see, as a matter of duty. But that can only be done successfully by a person who is a genuine well-wisher. In other words, if I point out your bad qualities because of my pride, I want to be one up on you, and I say, "But you got, you're this and you're that, and you're this and you're that," then there will be no good effect from my pointing out your bad qualities, because my mood is holier than thou mood. I want to be one up on you, so I'd say this and that about your bad. No, that person is not qualified to point out faults. A proud person, proud, envious person. But someone who is in the mood of service, that I genuinely, just like a doctor, he wants to help his patient get well, you see. He points out the defects in the patient, and the patient pays him money to have the defects pointed out, you see. So the person who is a genuine well-wisher, who really cares about that person, who really loves that person, really wants to help that person to become successful in Krishna consciousness, he can point out the faults. To help that person get over those faults. So, if I'm a genuine well-wisher, then I can point out your faults. But if I'm an envious snake, I'm not qualified to point out your faults. So we should all try to become non-envious well-wishers. That is the meaning of a Vaishnava. A true Vaishnava is the non-envious well-wisher of all living entities. That is the real meaning of a Vaishnava. You see? You can point out the faults. He's actually a Vaishnava, then he can point out the faults because it's with love. If someone's doing something out of love, if someone's speaking to you out of love, then they can say anything because you feel this, he's expressing his love for me by these words. So in this way, we have to, in a very loving way, we have to deal with each other. Not in a proud, not a proud peacock sort of mood, but a loving mood. Does that answer your question a little bit?
What if we don't have that full love or even some love for somebody, and this is still a problem, maybe you feel that maybe it's not, maybe it's just yourself.
What is that?
Maybe you don't have that full concern for somebody, so then what do you do?
Well, we
just work on it, do you?
You need to really care about other devotees' welfare. And if we don't have any concern for a particular devotee's welfare, that means we're not really properly situated. If you don't have compassion for that someone else can become happy in Krishna consciousness, and someone else can be making nice progress on the pathway back to home, back to God, and then there's a defect in your heart. And you have to go to some other Vaishnava who's qualified and can help you develop a better mood, a better attitude. That's why we have senior devotees. You see, senior devotee means his attitude is more loving than my attitude. That's the real meaning of senior devotee. He's more loving than I am. So if I find that my heart is, the well of my heart is bone dry of any loving feelings, then I need to find a devotee whose heart is oozing with love, you see. And I need to take shelter of that devotee's guidance, you see. Remember that, meditate on that devotee, meditate on his qualities, you see. Remember his wonderful qualities, even if you're not in that devotee's presence. It's by remembering a Vaishnava. By remembering an advanced Vaishnava, you can get that Vaishnava's blessings. You see, Vaishnavas are very powerful. They can deliver the whole universe. A true Vaishnava, you see. So, if you meditate on an advanced Vaishnava's qualities, just by meditation, you'll get his blessings. So, if we were finding we're struggling to manifest Vaishnava qualities, then we need to take shelter of those who are advanced Vaishnavas. And that will empower us to conquer the mind, to conquer the word, to conquer the anger, to conquer the tongue, the belly, and the genitals, and become true Goswamis ourselves. Okay? Any other questions? Yes?
Janaki Panat said you should use a stick with your son, your disciple, and your wife in which to correct them. Does that sound a bit harsh?
Like stick?
In the position.
Oh, Janaki Panat said what?
Yeah, it says like with your disciple or your son, you should always try and find some fault to correct them.
Yeah, the duty. Being a spiritual master myself, I have to deal with this issue. I have disciples. So it's my duty, if I simply flatter them and I say, oh, my disciples, you're all so wonderful, you know, you're great, you're fantastic, and that's all they ever hear from me, I'm actually their enemy. If I can't point out, because we all have our faults, we all have things that are holding us back on the pathway back to Godhead. So the duty of the father and the spiritual master to actually help the disciple realize what are his defects so he can overcome them. If I don't point out the defects of my disciples, I'm actually their enemy. I'm not their friend. I'm their true friend, their true well-wisher. That means I have to show them, what are you doing wrong? You see, I have to see, these are your defects. Now overcome those defects. Any other questions? Everyone satisfied now? Ready to be non-envious well-wishers of all living entities? Yeah.
What if we're not that smart enough to work out what to do?
You need to read Prabhupada's books scrutinizingly cover to cover. You know, you need to read all of Prabhupada's books. Because the fact is, we are kind of pretty dumb, you know. Prayanalpa yusha shabya kalavasin kalavyasmin yuge janaha mandasu mandamatayo madhyabhagra hyupadruta. According to Bhagavatam, we're pretty damn stupid in this age of Kali. You see? We're lazy, we're unlucky, we're misguided, our minds are always agitated. I mean, we're psychological basket cases in this age of Kali. That's a thing. So we have to get some good brains by reading these books very nicely. I was standing with one of my godbrothers, Tamal Krishna Goswami, one time in Dallas, when he was taking the darshan of Sri Sri Radhakala Chandji. And he was saying how by taking their darshan, I am getting intelligence. So there are many different things you can do that will give you the proper intelligence. Tesham satata yuktanang bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, Krishna says, I give them the intelligence. You see. So try to be devoted to Krishna. The simple thing, when you make an offering, try to do it with devotion. Not just mechanically. That my dear Krishna, you've so kindly given these foods so that I can live and not die. So now, but I want to offer it to you, my Lord. Because you are the one who is giving this all to me. Therefore I offer to you. It's by your kindness I have this food to eat. Otherwise I would be starving to death. So here I want to show you how much I appreciate your love. I want to offer this food to you. So in this way, by reading Prabhupada's books, by chanting with devotion the Hare Krishna mantra, by anything that you can do, by taking the darshan in a deep, absorbed way, Not just, you know, glancing at the deity, all right, I've finished my darshan for today. Now let me go take prasadam. Not like that, you know. Try to do everything in a very deep, absorbed way. People ask, what do you mean, deep and absorbed way? Everybody knows when you go to a movie, how you get absorbed in a movie. Everyone knows. So in the way you get absorbed in a cinema, to where when it's over, you forgot you were in Sydney. You were so absorbed in the cinema. In this way, you see, we should absorb ourselves in everything that we do in Krishna consciousness. Reading, chanting, darshan, service, association, everything you do, you should be so absorbed in it that practically you're not in Sydney anymore. You know, see? You're in the spiritual world. So in this way, Krishna says, by this devotion, Krishna, even though we are not very intelligent, Krishna will give you all the intelligence. Okay? All right then. So, looks like a good stopping point. We thank you all very much for participating in this Krishna consciousness movement. Kindly continue in this way with enthusiasm, dedication, determination, and patience. And Krishna will fulfill all of your desires. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.